Dear church, remember letters? Remember writing letters? Some of you are too young to have ever written a letter. And even I cannot remember the last time I hand wrote a letter. But I know that for lots of us, that was an important way of communicating at some point in our lives. That's the way we stayed connected with people. We do business, shared information, make inquiries of people, of businesses. But especially to stay connected and maintain relationships with people who are far away. Letters was it. I remember even up until the time I was in college, I was still writing letters, and college was a long time ago. But writing letters was the way to stay connected with friends who weren't close by. And when my family was living abroad when I was a teenager, we lived in Jordan for 3 years. Letters was definitely the way we communicated with our family back home in Canada. It was the way we shared information. It was the way phone calls were super expensive and we didn't have email yet, or it was in its infancy in the 90s. We surely didn't have it. And even sending audio cassettes back and forth through the mail was something my friends and I would do with each other. Letters and that's what we did. We used the mail. It was a really important way to stay connected with loved ones far away. These days, even email is really mostly only used to businessy kinds of things, to get work done. So my personal email, I know this is true of many of you, gets neglected quite a bit. No. Wes and I just had a conversation about this morning. Email is somewhere where we do business. And so church is my business, but it's not yours. And so you might not, know right away that there's something going on. Been doing lots of PTA business over email this week. Now, my dad still sends an email to my family every week. When I go home today and open up my email, there's going to be a letter from my dad saying what he and my mom did this week, and news from Rostern and what's going on with church and community and their volunteer work. And, I love that. I love hearing that news of what's going on. And I am terrible at replying. Sometimes if they're lucky, they might get a couple of sentences. But we have lots of ways of communicating with each other now that aren't sending letters or even emails. And I'm not necessarily mourning the loss of email or letters as a communication tool, because, we have enough trouble keeping up and we have lots of great ways of connecting to each other and communicating with each other. And we're learning new languages of communicating all the time. We just learned ASL this morning and that's not one of them, but we have lots of electronic ways to keep in touch. Immediately, we can send a text or, video chat with somebody, and that's great. We've all come very familiar with Zoom. Now, it is still really special to get a handwritten letter in the mail. It's really special to get a card or a letter in the mail that someone has taken time to write, because you know that it has taken time. And if you want to get a window on this particular part of the Bible, understanding letters as a way of communication is kind of important, because that's what we're doing, is we're hearing someone take time to record their thoughts and feelings and what's important to them and share it with a community that they love. Paul is pretty important to Christian understandings of who Jesus is and how we follow Jesus in the world. And all of Paul's writings in the Bible are letters. So that is the genre that we have before us when we understand that. And they're addressed, just like our letters are when we write a letter to somebody, to specific people in specific places about specific issues or things that they're facing. And that's what makes them so special so many years later, even now, and what makes them kind of frustrating, because they were written to specific people and communities. Reading someone's letters it's a really intimate experience. Can you imagine someone having access to your texts? for example, or to your email inbox. Like, that feels a little scary to me, to have someone know the way I'm communicating with someone else. It's almost like scandalous to think of like reading someone else's texts, to think about like the invasion that that is. And yet that's what we're doing. It's a window into this particular relationship and the people involved with it. I've been listening to a podcast the past week or so called Black History for Real. It's hosted by Francesca Ramsey, who I had heard of before. She's an equity educator and social media person, does lots of info, like shares lots of information about Black history and culture and how do we understand each other across racial boundaries. And so she and the other host, Conscious Lee, they're sharing sort of a dramatized history of different parts of Black history. And one of their key resources is letters. And so in a particular part of the series, they're looking at the, now I didn't write it down and I can't remember what it's called, but like that early 20s, like in New York, when there was sort of a Black renaissance of literature and art. And so they're talking about, in particular, W.E.B. Du Bois and County Cullen, who was, for a time at least, his son-in-law. And you really get a window into both the like tenderness and also animosity in those communities, because of letters that have been preserved and that they've written to each other. And within those communities, you get a real window into what the relationships were like, and why people felt the way they felt about each other and the beefs that people had with each other. It's so fascinating. And it's all like, if we didn't have those letters, we wouldn't know some of that really important information about what was happening in those communities. And Paul's letters give us that same window. And in this case, into his relationship with the Christians in Thessalonica. And as many issues as I have with Paul's theology, as he's trying to work it out in real time, the thing that I really love about Paul is how much he loves the church. I don't always agree with how Paul understands what it means to be a disciple, but he sends these letters, and you can tell how much he loves the people in those communities. Jake Elias, who was a professor of mine in seminary, calls this the long-distance pastoral embrace. Like, and I read that this week, and I was like, I could just imagine Paul's arms reaching out and just, like, hugging these folks. Now, Paul wrote these letters for lots of reasons. He wrote them to maintain connections in the church, churches he planted, to share instructions in theological insights or answer questions, resolve conflicts. Like, his letters do a lot. And when I think about some of the things that he does, that's still happening to some extent. And the one thing I thought of was Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail, which really was an instructive letter to the church, especially the white church. And he wrote particularly to white moderate churches and clergy, so people like myself were implicated, challenging their desire to, like, just wait till the time is right. Don't rock the boat. But King wanted those folks to know there is never going to be a comfortable or right time to ask for justice, to demand liberation. And following Jesus should mean a willingness to make trouble for the sake of liberation. And Paul, too, knew what it was to make trouble for the sake of God's kingdom. And he was a troublemaker. He walked into Thessalonica and he stirred up trouble. He stirred up trouble for the Jewish community there because they were a small community. They just wanted to keep their heads down and lay low and not have a lot of attention from the Roman Empire directed at them as a worshiping community. And Paul comes in there and he says, well, I'm a Jew and Jews should follow Jesus and Jesus is the king. And they were so upset by that they tried to run him out of town. They tried to get thugs from the docks to come and like get rid of this guy. He is causing trouble. They tried to get him arrested. So when Paul writes to the church in Thessalonica, he has good reason to feel very affectionate toward them because they kept him safe. They got him out of the way. They were dragged into court in his place and had to stand trial and did it for the sake of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So he writes to them and he remembers all of those things that he loves about being in community with them. He's reminding them all, you're doing a great job, keep it up. These are all of the ways that you're already following Jesus. And others have been hearing about it. He wants them to know, hey, I've heard about how people are talking about what you're doing here over there in Thessalonica. I think it's great. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to have to write a little paragraph to the for our Pacific Northwest Mennonite Conference annual meeting. They ask all churches to say, they say, tell us what's going on in your church. We want to know. And so I'm like, okay, well, what's going on at Evergreen? And having to think about it. And so the next thing I'm going to ask you to do is going to help me think about that a little bit. Because inside your bulletins, as Lene shared, there's a postcard. You can see inside that there's a postcard that says Evergreen on the front of it. And I'm going to invite you to think about, what do you remember about Evergreen? If you have to write a letter as Paul writes to the people in Thessalonica, this is what I remember about you. This is how I have experienced you. Imagine that you're writing, and the prompts are in your bulletin, and they're also on the postcard. And people at home, I'll give you some instructions in just a minute, too. But imagine you are writing to this congregation. How might you finish those prompts? And I'm going to give you an example of my own. And then I'll offer an opportunity for you to have some time to think about this. So this is how I wrote my postcard to Evergreen. To the Evergreen Mennonite Church, in the love of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, grace and peace to you all. I thank God for you when I remember you, because I remember the way you offer blessing. I am so thankful to have been received by your blessing as you welcomed me in ministry, and to be affirmed and supported by you. I am so thankful to be able to share that blessing with you through anointing and communion and preaching and Sundays like this, especially when we get to bless children. Even before I came to you, I knew about you. People have heard about how Evergreen contributes to the Mennonite Fellowship in Washington, running the coffee booth and the kids booth at the Mennonite Relief Sale, quilting together to contribute, to bless their young adults and send them into the world with quilts, to work at camp to support children and families. You give yourself in service, and your service is a blessing too. Evergreen, you are beloved by God, and you are cherished and chosen. From your pastor and disciple of Christ, Amy. Now, I had some time to think about that. And I'm putting you on the spot. So don't worry about coherent sentences or whatever. But I invite you to think about that as a prompt. We're not going to post them anywhere. These are not going to be public. But after we've had some time, if anyone would like to share what they've written, there'll be a little opportunity for that. And if you would like to send it, take it home and then send it to me, then I get the benefit of getting some mail this week. The address is already on there. And people at home, or if you're a guest here, I invite you to think about this in the context of your own community of faith or your own family and how you would write to those folks in your life. And I did remember to bring my music this morning. So I'll play a little bit of music. And if you just want to sit and reflect, that is okay too.